Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, one for Stacks and Jacks. I'm always Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 350. Dow futures up 28. And Nasdaq futures up 1950. We're trying to have an up day. We've had three down days in a row. Very kind of strange markets. We've had retail stocks all over the place. Either really good or really bad. And they're kind of trading off, which is kind of what they normally do. But this seems even worse. So, Kevin, were you the guy doing the bulletproof pickup truck and then smashed the window with a metal ball and had him blast out on the Tesla last night?
I guess I missed that one, huh?
It was like, evidently it's the rage on YouTube.
I would have done anything to be there in person.
Oh, God. Yeah.
If anyone's ever seen the movie Napoleon Dynamite, where the guy's trying to sell Tupperware and he's trying to prove how tough the Tupperware is, and he backs his car over it, and of course it cracks, so he just drives off. I imagine the guy at Tesla that's demonstrating that the glass won't break, who throws a metal ball at the window and it shatters, I bet he just wanted to drive off. It's so great.
Well, plus the Tesla guys are so, I mean, they get so much free press. I don't know what they do. They must give everybody a Tesla or something. They're like Apple, for God's sake. Anyway, it is sort of interesting. So, Kevin, hey, what's going on with the...
Hey, I got to tell you, though, I saw something more bizarre last night.
Uh-oh.
The Notre Dame... I saw the Notre Dame-Toledo game.
Well, I was going to ask you about it. Maddie was telling me that on the way in.
Well, among other things, it wound up 64-62 Notre Dame in overtime, and it was 62. Thank God Pfluger made his free throws right before the end, because the Toledo guy just took the inbounds pass and heaved it to the basket from quarter court and in three quarters of the court distance of the court and threw it in. So that, you know, I just looked at the people around me and said, that geez, that counts. I don't believe it. but here's how they got to overtime. First of all, they got down seven with a couple minutes left to go because of what is arguably the worst foul call I have ever seen. Guy just ran over John Mooney, and they called Mooney for the foul. And I was sitting there saying, "Well, maybe they called it on Gibbs from the side." No, they called it on Mooney for just being run over with the ball. Anyway, Bray got a technical, and they made the technicals, and then they scored, and so it was looking pretty bleak. The Irish scrapped back and got it, and got a final. They got a final shot in the closing seconds, and again, Gibbs launched a three-point shot, and he also got fouled, no call. The replay board, you know, showed that pretty clearly. Another guy ran over him, but I digress, because I wouldn't have any confidence in him making three free throws to send it to overtime anyway. But the ball was one of those shots that got, you know, stuck on the basket, you know, wedged in on the basket and the backboard.
That's wild from a shot from the front. Like, never.
Yeah, well, that's a very difficult shot from out the top of the key.
Yeah, to stick one.
So the ball's wedged in. Well, the possession arrow was to Notre Dame, so they got the ball back with a second and a half. And Leshefsky, and I mean, they can't shoot for beans, Tom.
Yep.
It's incredible. They were 8 of 35 from three-point distance last night. And I don't know whether to be more appalled by the 8 or the 35, because 35 out of 73 shots when you can't hit three-pointers is probably not a good
idea. Wait a minute. You watch the professional guys. That's all they do. That's what these kids do.
Yeah, I understand it, but, you know, to me, you know, the part of the problem is they don't screen very well, so they don't get their guys sprung free going to the basket. But, again, I digress. So now Nate Leshefsky, who for the game was 2 out of 7 on three-pointers, so at that point he was 1 out of 6, did a catch-and-shoot and knocked it down.
That's unreal.
So, you know, you went from this shot that if it hadn't been wedged in, there's no way they would have had time to get the rebound and get another three off. So instead, that wound up being a break for them.
I think you can go on YouTube, and watch Michael Jordan's 60 or 65 point game. And out of the 60 points, I'm going to say 60 plus points. If you watch close, I mean, if you played a lot of basketball and kind of have a feeling for what they're doing, not that I'm a genius at it, I'm not. I never coached or anything, but I'm going to say 20 of the points are very Jordan-esque, you know, drives down the lane, up in the air, going over people, stuff that, you know, arguably only a few people could ever do. The other 40 are, most of them are amazing amounts of work by the other guys on the team. A screen, a double screen, all of a sudden he gets the ball exactly when he gets to the spot he wants to shoot. There's somebody screening him, and he obviously has a very quick release, goes up and pumps the thing in from, you know, somewhere between 14 and 18 feet, maybe 12 and 18 feet. I mean, I'm going to say two-thirds of the shots were the work of at least three people. And that is amazingly hard work, and it's amazingly hard to teach because people don't want to be the guy that does the screening and all the other stuff and the passing. But if the pass gets there just when it's supposed to, the guy can't get through the screen in time to stop him, especially with Jordan getting up in the air pretty high for his shot. If it's a half a second late, the guy's there, right? I mean, but that type of work in basketball, you don't see in any pro team. Now, maybe will probably name one or two that still sort of do it. All the rest of it, walk down, take a look for an easy pass. They don't get it, heave up a three. I see that every night when I watch this stuff. I mean, it's not even basketball, but the regular basketball is a lot of work.
I will say that the threes that they were taking last night, they weren't bad shots at all.
Well, the college three is still.
They were open. They did work to get them. They'd run the offense. They'd get the shots, keep the ball moving, only to turn around and just miss them. And it's inexplicable. You got I'll go back to Leshefsky. He came into the program. His reputation was that he was a shooter. He was the guy who went to some of the all-star games that they have seniors in high school play and won the three-point shooting contest. He's shooting 125 on the season from three-point range.
Yikes.
And he wasn't much better last year. I don't know what gets into him because I watched them, you know, when they came out after halftime and they're doing their, shooting around, knocks down six three-pointers in a row. Go into the game, boom, clang, can't make it.
I'm going to say his footwork is hurried in the game and his footwork is not correct.
Yeah, it probably, the hurried is probably very important, an important aspect.
Now, when you say shooter.
But it's everybody. T.J. Gibbs can't shoot, you know, and he takes a lot of them. And it's too bad because that guy's a heck of a ball player. Everything he does well, except shoot. Well, if you're a guard, that's not a good thing.
Well, you know, when you say a shooter, our friend Thomas, our sometimes producer, he has a reputation of a shooter, not necessarily as a maker, but a shooter.
You're saying there's a difference between a shooter and a maker.
Anybody can be a shooter. The idea is to put one in once in a while.
Thomas is definitely a gunner.
At any rate, Toledo is a very good team. Any ACC team that's any good should be able to beat a MAC team that's any good. But Toledo is one of the best teams in the MAC, and they were picked to win their division. So, you know, it's not a big problem that it was a close ball game. It was just an ugly game. And I'll say this: Toledo was averaging 89 points a game, so to hold them into the low 60s was a bit of a deal, I think.
Well, you got to hold people in the 60s.
Jack Gillisland, who's a former Notre Dame player who does radio for them now. And I think he said it appropriately as I was listening on the way home. In the future, they'll show this game to people to torture them.
Well, if you're
neither team shot well. I thought the defenders were good. You
The
when you for the longest time, I was sitting there saying 8:30 start locally. They kept me up past bedtime for this crap.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you can only shoot, when you only score 70, you better hold them to the 60s.
You darn well better.
Yes.
And one other thing, you know, whenever they next are on TV, and you probably, you know, listeners probably won't see them. You can't see this very well on TV, but if you ever get a chance, keep your eyes on Rex Luger defending away from the ball, trying to deny his man from getting the ball. The guy, it's something to behold.
Is he the guy who got hurt last year?
Yeah, he is.
He's good?
He had the knee injury in the game against Purdue last December.
Yeah, he's good, 100% or close?
I don't know that he's 100%, but he's pretty good. He played 39 minutes last night, so, you know, he had that in him. Another one who didn't shoot well, and that never has been a great shooter, but for a guard, you know, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and no turnovers with a block and 6 steals, that's not a bad stat line.
No, that's good. That's a good game. What, how do you pick a headline to start here on the world today? Let's see.
I've decided that we need to steal all our headlines from Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, if we do the whole Trump presidency, it probably is. You know, he gets the Rodney Dangerfield role, the one that nobody wants anywhere near Bushwood Country Club. And I'm pretty sure that Judge Smales would be Adam Schiff. So we need to cast a few of the other characters, I think.
Let's see. Here's the headlines on Bloomberg. This is dumb. If you were asleep by 20 years, you look at this stuff. Trump's Fed pick Judy Shelton cast doubt on whether a central bank should be independent. Well, there is a Fed pick. China's Xi stresses need for mutual.
Well, might as well cast doubt on it. It isn't independent.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess. China's Xi stresses need for mutual respect and equality in trade deal. All right, now, how can we have any mutual respect after a year and a half of fighting? I don't know where we're going to get that all of a sudden. Let's see. Jeremy Corbyn, whoever he is, plans to end market capitalism, whatever that is. We seem like, Jenny Allen says, there is good reason to worry about the slowdown in the economy. So there you have it. And Tesla claims his bulletproof pickup truck was... Now, they said it was bulletproof. They didn't say it was steel ballproof. Why didn't they shoot? They should.
I gotta get this up on YouTube.
They should have shot something at it. If that's what they were going to do. I don't think that there is a, as you say, probably more eloquently than most, Kevin, is if you don't have some sort of a, and I go back to my first days ever when the Sam's opened up in Evergreen Park, and you walked in and there were 5 things on the wall. It was like words to live by. The customer is always first. Our goal is to provide quality products at the cheapest possible price. There was like 5 things that if you ever were in doubt what to do as a Sam's employee, you just looked up there and you read the 5 and they pretty much covered everything. And when you read these headlines and you see the stuff people say or listen to the stuff people say and see what they do, we don't seem to have any sort of direction at all in where we're heading. There's am I just being obtuse here? I mean, you'll read what one department's doing and another department's going something totally opposite. And then the president will say something and Congress doing something totally opposite. You'd swear the Dems and Republicans were a different country, which it really shouldn't be. They should be fighting about policy, not... And everything that you thought was, you're doing a good deed, you're giving other countries money, trying to help them out somehow, and then you find people here in both parties chasing the money like they're rabid dogs. I mean, it's bizarre, Kevin. You see two huge firms that have no business consolidating, getting together. There wasn't a hint, there's not one word yesterday about antitrust. You're just telling these two guys, no, you're big enough as it is, you don't need to get together. Because, of course, the talk among the talking idiots now is everybody else has to get together. E-Trade's got to get together with somebody because now all of a sudden they're not big enough. These guys got to get better. There should really only be. Do we really want to go to one bank, one brokerage firm? I mean, I don't know that that's. Is that where we're headed, or is that just news, or is it fun because people made some money, or what is it? Do we have any other than me and a few people on this show? Does anybody even know what antitrust is anymore? I don't even think anybody learns it. I mean, or has any respect for it. I mean, I don't see how this benefits anybody, this combination.
And they keep don't know what to tell you about the combination other than, you know, I believe in the antitrust laws and their intent. Congress and when's the last time an administration believed in it? I don't know. Long time ago. So it's a well-established direction that this country has gone, and it, I don't think it's healthy. It's not healthy for markets. It's not healthy for competition. I don't know that it's healthy for American workers in any way. It is kind of baffling that that this has never been an issue. But again, when we get to political campaigns, there are some important and difficult issues that require taking the time to explain and require people to be well educated. And I don't think we educate people very well. I don't think we educate them in antitrust laws very well. I don't think we educate them in the Constitution very well. I don't think we educate them in a lot of important issues very well. Now I have seen this in some of the school visits that I've done. I've seen people adding things to curriculum. And as an example, I'm trying to think of what the issue was. I don't remember now if it was trade or immigration or whatever, but, I was in a classroom in social studies where each student had an assignment to write five things on one side of the issue and five things on the other side of the issue. And I'm like, good for you, man. You know, make people think. Make people think not just what the issue is, but what the, what any side of the issue, thinks about it legitimately. I wish we would do more of that in education, because there is a certain amount of education that has become indoctrination. There's another part of it that has just become ignoring part, important part.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean...
We're the same thing on security and privacy, and that's why I say the Constitution, privacy is a big deal, and protecting our right to privacy should be a big deal, and it isn't.
No, and you talk about the business.
Congress, and then we do some grandstanding on it, which is, all great fun, but it doesn't, they don't do anything that helps.
Well, when they were talking about Google having a bank, I was listening to the, whatever you want to call them on TV, and one of the, not the people that are at the desk, they had a couple of guests in, and the guy's like, well, it's just very obvious. I mean, you really want to know not just the people are walking by stores and like, what they're buying and all kinds of, you really need to know, you really need to be able to tell people exactly what people are spending money on. What do you mean, you need to? You need to, well, of course that's saleable. I mean, why wouldn't anybody want to know exactly what, what Kevin O'Neill is spending money on? We used to have, get a load of this, we used to have at PTI, and I'm sure most firms do, we used to have a Visa card you could get through. I think we were at Mesro. I don't think RBC ever did it. But the bizarre part of this, Kevin, was if I wanted to, I could find out what you were spending on your Visa card. It was just there. I mean, I looked once. And the only reason why I looked is because I had a client that actually was a celebrity. We'll go nameless. To say she was drop-dead gorgeous is understatement. She puts, say 20, 25 grand in an account. And I'm supposed to be managing it, right? Well, the thing starts going down. And she's using the Visa card like there's no tomorrow. And I'm thinking, there's nothing here to manage. So it gets down to 10, and I get this call. I'm moving my account. Okay. Because she was supposed to put some money in because she'd just gotten this new gig, on TV and a whole bit. She was going to be like plunking in like, $5,000 a month and letting it grow. And I was going to put it, in stocks and so forth, which is fine. I mean, she didn't really need to protect anything. She just basically put it in a ETF every once in a while. I mean, we're talking about, I'm not charging her to manage it or anything. Also, I moved my account. Look at my account. It's down to $10,000. And I go, yeah, it is. I haven't really made a trade yet. Well, it should be going up. So I look at her Visa bill. It's like $300 for a blouse, $400 for some handbag. And I'm just going down the list. And I go, it's far enough. I got down to line 4, and I just said, you're spending everything on your credit card. Well, you're supposed to be making enough to make up for that. that's not the deal. Why don't you just go somewhere else? what are we doing here? I mean, but, you know, last thing I want to do is look at anybody's Visa card, Kevin. Why would I ever want to do that? And some people, you know,
insist.
Yeah, will insist. I have this thing about privacy. I don't want you looking at my stuff. I'm not going to look at your stuff. It's very simple. You know, it's like, I don't know, you know. But we don't have any national definitions. You would think that after 275 years, we wouldn't be led around by the nose by technology. You know, oh, no, well, if you can do it, it's legal. No, or it's moral, or it's something. I don't think people's, anyway. But then we get, you know, a president that, I think actually at the end of the day, Kevin, if we survive, 25 years now, it might have been a very good thing that somebody came in and just said, well, that's what you've been doing all along, but prove that you really want to do it that way, I'm doing it another way type of thing. I wonder if it's almost, if we come back together, it might be considered a positive thing, you know, but that's a big might. You know, I don't know. I mean, because, I mean, look at the.
Yeah, well, we never got the, we never got the sequel to Caddyshack, so we'll never know.
Yeah, even simple stuff like attorney-client privilege. Well, the guy's lawyer's in jail. Well, okay, because maybe we decided that attorney-client privilege doesn't stretch to paying off hookers. I don't know. I mean that's something nobody ever even thought about. It used to be when you talk to your attorney, it was privileged. Now in my industry, you know, a regulator has I don't know if they've gone there yet, but they're sniffing around that if they make you, like if you send an email to PTI or any brokerage firm, it has to come through a third party. I can't just delete it and say, I never got that one. I mean, if you send me an email, I mean, it's a communication to your client. Well, so you can't dump that, obviously. I wouldn't anyway, but you can't. So everybody has a third-party thing. So even if you were some kind of knave and wanted to bleep it, you can't, right? Which I have no problem with that. However, now some people are making the opine that if you talk to your attorney through your normal email, if it's held by a third-party provider, maybe it's not attorney-client privilege after all, because you willingly gave it to a third party. I didn't willingly do anything. You made me give it to a third party, right? Well, what's the difference? Well, there's a big difference, right? I mean, everything.
So good. I'll go back to the old way, and they'll say, "No, you can't do that."
Yeah, you can't do that.
You know, how's that for double talk? War is peace.
Yeah, we don't even have. And we have, when you talk about these firms and the zero, you know, commissions and so forth, the entire industry now is being driven by this payment for order flow, where people think they're getting some free, when in fact the order you give somebody is now considered a stupid order and to be sold to somebody who wants to take the other side of it. Totally different than when I started. Your job as a broker was to go get the best fill, and you were paid to do that. Okay, now people just want to say it's free. So there's this payment for order flow. So they're coming up with this new system where they're going to try and make believe that you have to show on every trade that you actually got the best order to try and justify the payment for order flow. So there's a massive new system that's going to cost people bazillions of dollars just to justify that even though you're getting paid, somehow you're doing the best job for people. What a crack of crap. You know, but this is how...
Can't your customers decide that and they'll vote with their feet?
What do you mean? They don't know what's going on. We don't sell it.
Yeah, you know, that's a new trend, too, is that we legislate under the assumption that people are stupid, which it may be true, but that's never been the basis for how we did things.
Well, the very first payment for order flow was none other than Bernie Madoff and how firms justified, who was the bozo who was head of the SEC at the time, I'll think of the name. He came from Donaldson, Lufkin, and Jarrett. They're going to come down on the side of disclosure. Well, they never said Kevin O'Neill sent a trade into Schwab. Schwab made believe that they sold it, that they did the trade on the New York Stock Exchange, where they actually had to pay a commission to do it. In fact, they did it on the Chicago Stock Exchange, where they had no chance of bettering the bid or the offer. And got paid for doing your order. They would never say that. they would say on the back page, you know, from time to time when the moon is in the seventh house, we might go to a different place than the New York Stock Exchange and we might get paid for it. They never once said they did it on your order. So you never knew. I mean, it's really, 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 really messed up in one man's opinion. And now it's getting even more messed up. So S&P futures up 550. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Whitmer on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. Hey, real quick, Kevin, while I was on my soapbox the other day about people downtown paying a tax so guys on the White Sox could make more money. What do you think of this new contract that this catcher just got? Like $60 billion. I keep thinking everybody paying 10 cents more every time I buy a sandwich downtown. It just rankles me a little bit. Just saying. SP futures up 475. NASDAQ futures up 22. Dow futures up 50. Please don't write in and tell me how much better my life is because there's a team called the White Sox in Chicago. I refuse to buy that. DAX up 26, 0.2%. FTSE plus 84, that's 1.1%. CAC around up 19.3%. So the FTSE is an outlier there. Nikkei up 74.3%. Shanghai down 18.6%. Hang Seng making back some of what it lost yesterday. Got clobbered yesterday, as you recall. Today it's up 128.5%. Bonds, 1.75. They're going down again. They got up to over 1.8. They're sneaking down again, or the rate is sneaking down. Bonds are sneaking up. Bund is minus 0.35%. Japan, they're coming back up though. This actually is a pretty big move today for them. They're only minus 0.08. And so that's a full 25 basis points move today. That's a lot. And gold, we've got up 7.60, 14.71. Silver up 9 cents. We've got oil up 18 cents, 58.40. Brent up 5 cents, 63.92. And I keep being urged by myself, you should do something in one of these stocks that does this copper, because one of these days you might see this China actually get off their dead ass and the copper might come back up again, but it's just not. 263, I think I'll wait on that one for all. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Go out and buy a sandwich and pay this new guy's salary.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like we just have an issue right now on the Eisenhower outbound. Just before First Avenue, there was an earlier crash. That cruiser getting cleared up. But this has old post office out to Mannheim, 45 minutes to Route 390, 58 minutes, and growing. So expect delays on the outbound Ike if you're heading out west on I-290 from downtown. Edens looks okay. Kennedy, we have an issue now on the outbound side blocking the two center lanes just before Addison Street, a crash. So downtown to Montrose is up to 32 minutes, to O'Hare 45 minutes. So that's not good for a Friday morning this early on the Kennedy. So that just came across the screen just now. So outbound Kennedy and outbound Eisenhower you'll want to avoid. Stevenson looks good in both directions. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are all quiet. I-355 and the 294 Tri-State out in the Burbs are quiet. And off the expressways, we're looking pretty good too. Just one crash to report, Raw Wing Road at Army Trail Road in the western suburbs. There's an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, we're back to being cold in Chicago after we had a couple of days of decent weather. Today, well below normal. Partly cloudy skies, a high of just 36 in the city. Right now, it's cloudy and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 65 today. Right now, it's mostly clear and 51. In sports, the Blackhawks dropped their second straight, losing at home to Tampa Bay 4-2. Coyotes were off. Bulls were off as well. Suns lost to the Pelicans 124-121. Thursday night football, it was the Texans over the Colts 20-17. College hoops, as we talked about to lead off the show, Notre Dame beat Toledo in overtime 64-62. And lastly, the White Sox got their man, all-star catcher Yasmani Grandal. They signed him to a four-year, $73 million deal. Chief.
Why don't you go get him as a client, Manny?
What could I do for him?
You could introduce him to me.
Oh, introduce him to you, so you could get him as a client.
Well, you could.
What's my referral?
Whatever you want. I'll put some commercials on about your barbecue sauce.
$73 million he makes. What does his money manager get?
Probably a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
He probably takes it all. I hope not. But some of those guys end up with not much when it's all over.
Ain't that the truth?
I still think the best one of those stories was the guy Scottie Pippen had that sold him the jet that he knew was too loud to get into the private airports. It was his jet he sold to him. Some bizarre story.
That's special.
And Scotty had hired, I don't know if you knew this, Kevin, but I think Scotty hired an accounting firm to watch the manager and then a law firm to hire to watch the accounting firm. And the guy still, absconded with most of his money. And I think one of the two firms paid off, either the accounting firm or the law firm. came up with a bunch of dough because they didn't watch. Bizarre. I mean, just an amazing sort of thing. But no, Kevin, you know, when you talk about news and you talk about regulation and who gets too big to the Schwab, what happens on the stock side, for anybody who trades a lot of stock, you'll notice that a lot of times you're going to get fills. As a matter of fact, probably most times, that you look at IBM and you might put an order in at, you just sell it at 160. I'll pick it. Where is my IBM? It's 160. That's being nice. 135. It used to be 160. So you put an order in to sell it at 135, and if you watch it, you'll notice that the thing is trading. It might be 134.95 bid at 135, and all of a sudden you see the IBM trading. You know, how could I not be filled? What's happening is they allow people in the these black holes and so forth to trade within the penny. Now, the spread is supposed to be a penny. Now, when I was in the business on the trading floor, the minimum spread, and you could argue about whether it was too big at an eighth, it probably was, but say at a 16th, maybe it wasn't, or a nickel, whatever it is, everybody obeyed it, you know, everybody had the same rules. If you came into the pit and you wanted to buy, 100 calls at 2.75, and there was a customer there, he got filled first, if he was in the book, and competed if he wasn't, and he always got some. Now, I didn't get a chance to jump in front of him and say, I'll do it at 274.999, and jump ahead of him, knowing that he's still offered at 275 or 2.75, because the minute I think that I'm wrong, I could just buy his, and all I risk is, you know, a hundredth or a thousandth of a cent. You didn't get to do that. Everybody traded on the same. Well, some moron got talked into, oh, no, these guys should be able to trade within. So when you go to a Charles Schwab or someplace and they do that trade and they do the at 999, they actually have the stones to come on TV and say they're bettering the order flow, now, which is technically correct, okay? Instead of paying 35, you're paying 34.999. But now the issue is, why would anybody ever be at 35 if they can trade ahead of you until somebody really wants to trade with you, and now it's 136 bid? So if you have no rights to actually be traded with as a customer by being the first at that price, all the other stuff falls apart. So you can say, yes, I bettered Kevin's order by a hundredth of a cent, and it's free. So Kevin puffs out his check and walks down a block, and I got a great deal. But the issue is there now less and less standing orders, and you might have gotten filled lower had there been somebody with an order in there. You wrecked the whole system. So you can't wreck the system and then say it's wrecked, but by the way, you're a thousandth of a cent better than it being wrecked. And yet they actually have commercials like that, which are so disingenuous, you would think that a penny would be narrow enough that everybody would. So if you want to change all this stuff back to normal, first thing I would do is say nobody trades within a penny. But they're not asking me. Because how our regulators get talked into this crap, I have no idea. I mean, we must just have, I don't know, if they're getting paid, or they're going to, you know. Well, we've had some people, maybe because they're watching them closer, I don't know, politically. I mean, we've had people in the Trump administration. Who's the guy, the Department of Interior, Kevin, that was the lobbyist for the firm that wanted this property, and then he became a Department of Interior, and then he said it's no longer federal lands, and then he left it for the job at the place again, and they got the single bid for the place?
Oh, was that Scott, what was his name?
But if we're not, you know, as a country, you know, I'm not into riots. If we don't, I mean, if our law enforcement people aren't going to do anything, or the president's not going to do anything, someday, you know, there's going to be 1,000 people show up at the guy's house and drag him out. I mean, people are going to get so pissed off at this because there's so much money involved, Kevin. There's so much money. And I think the only thing that saves us from riots, financial riots, whatever those may be, are the fact that most people have no concept, including me, by the way, of what like $10 or $20 billion is. Okay. Those guys sold like $50 billion over 5 years. That's cool. I don't even know what that means. If you did, I think we'd be running in the streets with I don't know what we'd be armed with. Hopefully water balloons. But I mean, if anybody,
the water balloon rebellion actually would be a really cool thing.
Yeah. I mean, you think that the reason why these drug companies can steal so much dough is because people can't add? I mean, once in a while, if you do the math, you sit there and go, wait a minute. How much? I keep coming back to this one because they got the 2 extra years on the patent. And plus, it's such an obvious deal that it was $45 a pill when it was not generic, and it's 5 after or 8 or something. Let me get this straight. $40 a pill on Viagra for 2 years times, God, how many pills per day do people take, Kevin? They sell that stuff. But it must have been plenty because they had the best-looking women on earth on those commercials, not to mention the best luggage I've ever seen in my life. I still like that where the lady had about the 15 bags of the $1,000.
Best luggage. Is that what the kids are calling it today?
Remember the commercial with the lady had the 7 or 8 incredibly huge, gorgeous pieces of luggage, and the guy's got the little leather briefcase, and she's dropping the Viagra pill on top of it?
I hit the clicker for that.
I'm sitting there going, God, where do you even buy that luggage? I never even saw something like that. Let's just say it's not at Sam's Club. you're not buying that luggage. Just saying. But I mean,
so you're saying they were going for what were they going for, the romantic getaway?
Evidently, and from what?
But the guy was taking business with him, wasn't he?
He was bringing. Well, I don't know. Maybe he just had his one pair of spare underwear in his briefcase. I don't know. But he didn't have any bags. He wasn't planning on being there very long.
Briefcase full of condoms.
And you know what's even more bizarre is that because I did a thing on that when they went from 17 to 19. So I researched into the thing. You know, Viagra comes in 3 strengths, right? 25, 50, and 100. But they're capsules, so you can't, and they're all roughly the same price, maybe a little more for the 100, but you can't cut them in half. They're capsules or something like that. So it's not like if 50's your dose to get the job done, you can buy 1/100th and cut it in half. They're pretty clever. I mean, you know, obviously if you pull an aspirin out of there and you want to take a half of one, you can cut it in half, right?
Yep.
But not with the Viagra. But I did notice that when she was dropping the pill in the guy's briefcase, it wasn't the 25 or the 50. She was giving him the full dose. She was giving him the 100. Just saying, you know.
Plus, giving them multiples too.
Yeah, boy, I don't know. I don't know what you do if you take too much of that stuff. I don't think that'd be good. But
there's this 4-hour thing that they keep talking about.
That's not good with that. But you know what's funny when we're on the air, Kevin, like you are, 2 days a week, you kind of go from topic to topic, and you didn't think
we were going to venture into Viagra today, but yep, keep going.
Well, what I'm saying is what I get the feeling, maybe the listeners just think I'm nuts more than I am. You get the feeling that it's all the same topic. Here's an issue. We thought we had a way we were dealing with these things for a long time. Now it's not at all clear that the way we used to deal with it is the way people want to deal with it now. There seems to be somewhat of a, I won't say new morality, or a different point of view. And now, there doesn't seem to be any rules here. And the next day, we're on what should be a completely different subject, but it's the same subject. There used to be kind of rules here. Now it doesn't look like they are. People do whatever they damn well please. As I go from topic to topic, that seems to be the central theme. You know, you understand what I'm talking about at all? I mean,
I do get what you're talking about. And, you know, the whole time I think, you know, I'm... In many ways, I'm very glad about that I live where I do, because it's not that everybody follows the rules religiously or anything, but there is a different ethic in the business community here, because we're not, you know, I don't live where the people, where most of the companies anyway, are the ones hiring lobbyists and causing laws to work in their favor. So, yeah, do we have, our AM Generals and Whirlpools in the area? Yeah, but most of the business community is like the company I described the other day, you know, on Wednesday on the air, where they thrive because they do good work, and they rise and fall because they do good work. And, it's kind of nice, and, sometimes as we talk, I feel real fortunate that I am away from that, you know, Fortune 500 type of business community, because it being immersed in it daily would just drive me nuts.
Well, it seems like there's a there's a critical mass that you achieve, and I hope, don't take this wrong, I hope your guys that are just doing good work in your area, I hope they never reach the point, Kevin, where they're, like, noticed. Because if you are, then all of a sudden you're in the game. And you may end up, I mean, the CBOE was a perfect example. CBOE was an upstart. It was a thorn in the ass of all these firms because the CBOE, with the OEX trading what it did, the CBOE controlled the market, which is a total anathema to the member firms. They want to control the market. That money you give them is their money. It's a whole different attitude than what the people on the trading floor know. People are trading their own stuff. They're trading options. They're sending orders down here. We're trading these things in a legitimate manner. Anybody comes down here, wants to see us trade, come on down. And everybody walks down there and goes, well, it has its flaws because it's, you know, it wasn't electronic and you're bringing orders from the pit, but it wasn't electronic in those days. But it seems to me that every time my order gets down there, some person is getting paid to do my order in an open outcry and people are competing for it and it looks pretty damn straight to me. The firms are like, wait a minute. There's people that actually are going to these other places and trading their own stuff instead of giving us the money. We just want the dough. I mean, and we want to charge people a percent, percent and a half a year for basically doing nothing. And if the more long as the market keeps going up, we're heroes, right? And that's the politics in the market now. Imagine what will happen if we turn down, both to the president using it as a scorecard and all the people that are locked in, you know, the wealthy people, or not wealthy people, people that have 401ks and everything. Market corrects 40%, which it has done before. I'm not predicting that. I mean, all of a sudden, you got a political problem. You got a real problem because once you reach critical mass, I remember one of the examples, and I look at small examples and big examples. For those that don't know, I've been wearing contact lenses since the darn things came out because, I don't have the best eyesight. Now, when I put the contact lens in, I'm fine. So, correctable to 20/20, I guess is what they would say. Well, the only juice, whatever you want to call it, the conditioning solution or whatever, I think was made by Allergan or somebody. Well, all of a sudden, this Mr. Boston group comes out. That's okay. They're only marketed through some optometrists and everywhere in the store. I'm going to say under the radar, Kevin, the people like you, these guys are coming out with a product. The optometrist said it was better than the other stuff. And if you went to your optometrist, it's $2 a bottle versus $5. All of a sudden, somebody got a hair up his behind. Well, maybe we should get in the store. They get in the store, and I'm sure in that little industry, there's an outrage. And sure enough, that wasn't a year later, they're bought by somebody. And then a year later, they're bought by, like, somebody else. I'm sure they went to the family and said, you know, there are probably five kids, and one guy's running the place, or one lady's running the place. How about $3 million for your place? And everybody sits there and goes, you mean $1 million a piece? I don't even like my brother-in-law who's running the place. Screw him. Let's get out of this. You guys can have it. Same thing happened to Romano Beverage. Same thing happened to Canfield's. Same thing happened to Jay's Potatoes. I mean, once you reach the point where somebody notices you and you are a little bit more than the thorn in their behind, they're going to come get you. I mean, when Best Kosher all of a sudden became the hot dog of choice at Costco everywhere you went, Sara Lee couldn't wait to go buy them at some price. I'm
Sara
sure.
Sara Lee, the one that owns
Ballpark.
What's the name of the...
Sara Lee owns.
I can't remember, yeah. But yeah, because now we're down to one. On most grocery stores, we're down to one kosher dog, unless you're going to a kosher.
Well, now there's Hebrew and, National and Nathan's. Hebrew National knows it's kosher, but Best Kosher.
Yeah, I'm not even thinking Nathan's. I just can't remember the name of the other one, and I don't like it as well as Best. And no, yes, I'm. Probably, now you got me riled up. You're messing with the good hot dogs.
Well, I'm saying so they bought them and put them out of business now. According to Clayton Act,
they discontinued the brand.
Yeah,
Vienna's better than all those anyway. So.
I agree. I like Vienna's too.
I think the ones that were the best ones you ever were to get at a hot dog stand, and the guys who run the hot dog stands will agree with me. By the way, who bought David Berg and put them out of business, Kevin?
I don't know who bought them.
Somebody did, and all of a sudden they're nowhere to be found. But if you went to like Fat Chinese and Chicago Dog and those places, they used 20 years ago. They were all David Berg. And now there's something called Red Hot Chicago.
Chicago Red Hots.
Who makes those?
I'll look it up. Those are not bad.
They're not bad, but they're not as good as David Berg or the Vienna's.
And they're not as good as Vienna's, but they're not bad.
But I'm saying these are all. mean, when Chevrolet.
The problem is that they were competition killers. The acquisition was to kill the competition, not to invest in the product.
Well, when I drove a cab, I drove a Checker Marathon. Did you ever ride a Checker Marathon?
Probably. I don't know.
Well, you know, the old cabs?
Yeah.
I remember them.
I drove one of those. They were spectacular as cabs. And, no, I mean, they were dead. You couldn't market them today. There was no safety equipment on them or anything. But
they weren't cabs. They were little tanks.
Well, they were little tanks, yeah. And, but Chevy bought them, and 2 years later put them out of business. God's sake. The first line of the Clayton Act, or Sherman, any combination of restraint of trade, it's right there. But do you think the government could go after General Motors? Too big, right? I mean, these are...
Can't do it.
No, these...
Red Hot Chicago claims that no one owns them. They own themselves.
Maybe.
They started in 1986, and now they're carried in all throughout Chicagoland and starting to get distributed nationwide.
Maybe, well, good for
a
them.
A success story.
Where are they looking?
Oh, yeah, cool. Good for them. Now watch. A year from now, let's have this conversation again and check it out. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Once you become a thorn in somebody's side, the things that are very vulnerable are the family-owned places when the old man dies. Or the mom dies, if she's the one who runs it. I mean, if you have...
Yeah, when there's no good succession plan.
Well, even if there is, Kevin's running it.
Upon further review, it looks like Vienna might have bought these guys.
I'm thinking I don't think they're independent.
They were independent, and it looks like Vienna must have purchased them and just kept their brand as like an alternative.
Cool.
Which is interesting.
Again, in locales, you will find some stuff. It may not be hot dogs, but, example here is Zolman Tire, which is a local brand. They got stores all over, Michiana here. And it's a really, really good business. And some of the things, stories I could tell you, just give you an example. A year or so ago, my exhaust system, the exhaust pipe and the muffler broke off from the muffler. And so it's dragging on the ground. Well, I discovered this pulling out of the driveway going to work. So I just slowly drove over to the nearby Zolman's, went in and said, I don't know if this is something you fix. And they said, no, it isn't, but, we can rig it up for you so that you can actually drive and then you can drive to another place. So they took it in, put it up on the rack, wired some things up and sent me on my way. I said, what do I owe you? Nothing.
Yeah.
It's a service organization. Different story. I had a slide off about 5 years ago on an icy road. Young woman pulled up behind me and said, do you need any help? And I said, no, I'm just going to change the tire. And, the tire, the way it hit the side of the curb on the road, flattened it. And so I said, there's a Zolman's up at McKinley. I'm just going to drive over there. I'll get the tire replaced. Next thing I know, the Zolman's truck is pulling up behind me. So first of all, the young woman actually was nice enough to go over to Zolman's and say, somebody is coming in. They said, where is he? And next thing I know, I have the truck pulling up behind me to help me.
Kevin, what's wrong with Chase?
There's businesses like that, and his prices are competitive, even though we have Bell Tire, Tire America, Tire Rack, everybody is here. So you get those, and they don't get enough credit for being great businesses, and it's second generation ownership now. Nate's probably in his late 40s, and is running a really, really good business. So there's some hope out there. It's just we need to nurture that kind of stuff rather than destroy it.
Well, some of your big operations, scary enough. Not to change your theme here a little bit. But all it's some of its individual places. I mean, I say one of the first Sam's in this area was one in Evergreen Park. And I went in there with a flat tire. The guy fixed it, and I go, I don't think that's the tire I bought at Sam's. The guy goes, looked like a tire to me. I don't care. You bought a couple at Sam's, you buy the next couple at Sam's. See ya. Okay. They're individual people can be nice even in... I mean, they could be very entrepreneurial, even in bigger places, if you allow people to do that, which some...
Well, and when you find it across multiple sites and so on, then it's the leadership pushing it from the top down.
And they're, you know, they're like saying it, yeah,
throughout the company, and that's always so cool to discover.
All right, Kevin, we're going to let you go, but you probably want to listen in. Todd Gunderson's coming on from Credit Union One, and we're going to talk about mortgages, a little bit of the history and what they do. And this is a whole different program. You and I ever talk about competition and people exiting. These guys are finding a niche in how, you know, how bad banks have become, and they're going great guns. And the more I talk to these people, the more I like them. And I think this is going to be a really nice interview. SP Futures up 5.25, NASDAQ Futures up 20. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters, the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's john@PTIsecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Webber. We're on the board. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 1850. Individual stocks moving this morning. Boeing's up $1.40. As we're getting to be crunch time, if this thing is going to be, the 737 MAX is going to be re-cleared for takeoff between now and the end of the year. And I don't know if they're going to make it or not, but the stock one day, the rumors are, it is, they're up, one rumor is down, but we're not going to talk about that for a while. We have, backed by very popular demand, especially by me, Mr. Todd Gunderson, COO from Credit Union One. Todd was on a couple weeks ago talking about the credit union business in general, and I asked him to come back on. I want to talk a little bit more about the mortgage side of the business, because I think we covered all the other stuff they do last time. We'll do it again. We'll have mine again, obviously, but I want to talk about the mortgage. Todd, how are you? Welcome back.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Everything's going really well.
You guys, last time it sure seems like you guys aren't afraid to try something new. You land where you want to be, and you're cutting into an area. Kevin and I were just talking about in his area in Southwest Michigan. There's a lot of businesses that are, especially in the transportation area, and businesses that service those things that are growing fairly rapidly, because that's become a hotbed of it's a transportation center pretty much, that Northern Indiana, Southern Michigan area. Some of that stuff's coming from Chicago probably, but not all. Some of it's new. And I think what you guys are doing, you're seeing kind of an old sloppy business with some of the banks, and not that credit unions have been around a long time, but you're taking major advantage, and you're coming in and saying, look, we're just doing stuff better and servicing people better. And I want to talk a little bit about the mortgage side of that, and I just want to do just a brief history of when I was young. Your mortgages were the savings and loans, and those guys, I think, Todd, you know better than me, kept most of those loans, if not all, in-house, in the neighborhood. Their charter was what, 80-85% of the loans they gave out had to be real estate, correct? Mortgages or something like that. And I'm going to say this is very simplistic. The mortgages were 6.5. The passbook rate was 3.5, and with the 3%, you paid people salaries, you paid for the building, you paid for the Little League uniforms, and everybody was happy, pretty much. Then came the resolution trust issue when interest rates went through the moon and people were paying 12% on passbook and only making 8.6 on the mortgages, and that didn't work out mathematically. So there ended up being somewhat of a helter-skelter, Fannie, Freddie, a lot of people doing mortgage businesses, some banks, some independent mortgage brokers, and we really have never gotten back to a huge extent what I thought was somewhat of stability that the savings and loans gave. And now we have firms like yours that are entering the business, and from what I understand, especially from my significant other that does some real estate, some credit unions, you guys included, have become quite a force, and people like dealing with you because that's where they have other accounts. And how do you get in the business? How do you become a plug-in to Fannie and Freddie? Is there like a clearing firm, or the day you guys decided you wanted to do mortgage, all that stuff's available to you, or how does that work?
Yeah, you go through a process where you create connectivity into Fannie and Freddie, and just like anything else, through technology and establishing the service rights. The one thing that even if you do go through Fannie and Freddie, that person is a member of the credit union, and from their standpoint, there's nothing visual or that they feel a change. They're going to meet with the same people at the credit union that they did, and we're going to be able to service the other accounts that they would choose to get in the future. So it's just a conscious choice. I think you see a lot of credit unions over the years have become more sophisticated and are utilizing some of the tools that the banks have used forever. I mean, the banks are still doing about just shy of $5 trillion in mortgages. I think the credit unions are up around $550 billion. So it's still predominantly weighted towards what you would say is the traditional banking. But each day, the credit unions, they're getting more and more comfortable in that space, and people are becoming more aware.
Well, just out of curiosity, how does it, you would never do this because I think you like where you are. What if Todd and Matt Webber decided they want to hang out a shingle as an independent mortgage broker? How do you guys sell mortgages? I mean, how do these independent guys get started?
Well, they're usually, as a broker, they have the resources available. who they choose that backer to be. You know, some are obviously a little stronger than others, you know, but there's quite a few of them around the industry. Us personally, we've got our shingle out as Credit Union One, and we hold on to the non-conforming loans, which are the ones the government won't take, and the things you hear us advertising on the radio, it's like the jumbos, or maybe we do 100% financing because that person, you know, that's what they need at that time. That's not something the government's going to do. So the credit union is backing that loan to help them get up and running. So some of the special programs we're helping the communities and helping specific individuals, those are things that we're going to retain. And your more traditional rubber stamp type deals, those are things where we deal with Fannie and Freddie, but we keep the servicing so that we can still help that member throughout their life cycle.
So if I got a mortgage through you, and I was lucky enough to last another 30 years, for that whole 30 years, I'm writing the check out to Credit Union One.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. From the member's perspective, there is no change whatsoever. The only person they're going to deal with is Credit Union One for all of their financial needs.
I think when I got my mortgage in Beverly in the 80s, I say, Todd, in the first 5 years, I think I was on my fourth person I had to write the check out to. I think from flying from place to place.
Yeah, that was something that was pretty common.
Yeah, it was. If I'm going to a place that you don't want me to go, just say so. The Fed is out buying mortgages again at a massive rate in the last month, even though they said they weren't going to do it anymore. Do they just call the same four people, or can you guys get into that?
Yeah, they're buying in bulk, so I mean they're just going out to the open market. I mean, so I'm sure that they're talking to your large people, you know, your Wells's, your Chase's, your B of A, a lot of those are selling large tranches. But I'm also imagining that they're packaged together. They're not, you know, necessarily individual loans. So they're just tapping into that market and bringing them in house.
So there's no way you guys could bundle up 1,000 of your crummiest ones and sell it to them at 100 cents on the buck like the other guys are.
No. There's no opportunity for us to do the big short if that's what you're looking for.
Because I get the feeling they're paying way too much for this stuff, but I can't prove it, obviously. But anyway, so why wouldn't somebody who's a member of your place, if they're getting a mortgage, why wouldn't they give you guys a chance? I mean, for God's sake. The rates
right now, I think a lot of people are feeling that way. Our phones are ringing off the hook. I feel like one of those infomercials, but yeah, the phones are ringing off the hook. We've got a lot of people that are reaching out for the first time. We actually have had a lot of people that have been introduced to us through the advertising. You said, how are we getting into it? And a lot of the things are saying, you know, hey, we're out here. Here's an opportunity for you. Check us out. And the thing that we're finding is that once they do, they enjoy the service and they enjoy all the other products that we can help them with. So I would agree with you, Tom. There are lots of people that are saying, why not? Because they didn't know what they didn't know. And once they pick up the phone and start asking a few questions, they realize that they can get a pretty low rate with great service.
Does every branch have a full like mortgage group? Or if you're going to get a mortgage, you probably want to go to this particular branch because that's what they specialize in.
No, you can walk into any one of our branches. You can apply online, and we've got a tremendous online program, so you can be at home and go through the entire process. And we've got pretty much every type covered. So if you're the type where you want to go through the whole process yourself, go online and not talk to anybody, you can certainly do that through our process. Or you can walk into the branch and say, hey, I'm old school. I want to sit down and talk to someone, and they can take care of you. Or you can call in and speak to someone on the, you know, through the contact center, and they'll say, hey, let us walk you through this. The cool thing about what we have going on is, you know, with our technology, we can actually walk through the loan with and I can help you. So if you're like, hey, I'm stuck on this, it's almost like a mirror. I can see what it is that you're doing. I can help you through that process.
Who gets
and then
the
turn controls back over to you?
Who goes out and grabs the appraiser and all the other stuff? Do you guys have a list of people that who would hire that guy, me or you?
We do. We take care of everything for you. So, like I said, you go ahead and you take the application. You know, you get your conditions, the things that you normally turn in for your mortgage to get approved, and then we're going to handle you know, the appraiser and the title company and make it convenient for you. I mean, we've had people where we've closed their loan for them at their kitchen table because that's what was most convenient for them. They couldn't afford to even get into the branch.
Okay. I mean, it's so it's service, and then afterwards, they're always, I mean, I guess it didn't matter to me who I wrote the check to, but it seemed kind of odd. How do people even, at the end of the day, this is just knowledge of the industry, do most people even know where their loan is after 10 years?
You know, I would say mortgages are one thing that they don't have a lot of loyalty for until they experience the opportunity to go through and go, hey, they treated me right, and then they stick with you. I think they see it as a commodity of, I can get a mortgage from anywhere, until you get on that path of having a bad experience or get on the path of having a great one, and that will help you.
Well, my
that will help you maintain those members.
I mean, I know some of this only because I have an attorney friend who does some of this stuff, and I would say my significant other, she's real estate. We of course have these discussions. I won't call. You never have an argument with your wife or girlfriend, do you? It's always a discussion.
No. She's usually educating me on my opinion.
At least in her mind, but that's okay. You know, it's all right. That's you know, just the bane of males. Just what we have to deal with. I constantly have this, maybe you can settle this for us. We constantly have this discussion where Audrey says, you know, it's at Wells Fargo, it's at some place, and they're trying to get this foreclosure, trying to get a decision on a price and blah, blah, blah. I said, Audrey, they probably can't even find the person who owns the mortgage. She goes, what are you talking about? It's Wells Fargo. I said, no, they're not. They're servicing it. I said, the mortgage could be in Saudi Arabia, for God's sake. It could be at the Fed. And you're not going to call up Jerome Powell and said mortgage 444-5, you know, the things they have 180 grand, will you take 160? Now, I said, I don't even know who makes that decision, the bank or who does that? You're not going to find that person. I mean, in some percentage, maybe I'm talking 10% of the mortgages, maybe 40, I don't know. How do you even find a decision maker at that point?
Well, that's taking place at the bank. I mean, that you're being paid to service the account on behalf of the federal, you know, on behalf of Fannie and Freddie. So we have constant contact with them. So as you go through the process, you're the one that's dealing with the member or in the bank's case, the customer. They can't afford to be able to, as you said, there's too much on their plate if they were to service all of them. So each bank individually, they maintain that servicing right, and they're doing that on behalf of the institution that owns it, and they're working through that.
Well, so
collecting payments and trying to do the past due. So you usually keep in contact with that person, but you always do have the odd rogue that, you know, that goes bad and you're looking for.
So if I'm the poor Arab Sheik or the poor Fed, which is of course our money, and it's $180,000 mortgage, one day I get a check for 160 and say that's it, right? I mean, obviously that must be what happens. It was a foreclosure. That's the best we could do. Like it or lump it, right? I mean, what else could?
Yeah, you go through the foreclosure process. It's used in Illinois. It is a drawn out process once you get into that scenario, and you work through it the best you can to reduce the loss.
It's a, I don't know. It seems like it's an odd world when that happens. And I mean, the Fed essentially bought, what'd they buy? A couple hundred thousand, a million mortgages. I'm curious as how they would even know what the hell they had. You know,
they're dealing with partnerships with the banks and credit unions like us, and then you're handling the servicing.
Okay.
That's who's facilitating all those conversations on their behalf.
And then the time frame there is because they're just overwhelmed, or there's just too much of that going on, I mean, I guess. Because some people tell me a foreclosure might take a year.
Oh, for sure. That's absolutely the case, and especially in the state of Illinois. Some states are more difficult, and some are a little easier. Unfortunately, we're in the more time-consuming process with the state of Illinois.
I know you mentioned it last time. What states are you guys in now?
We have physical locations. We're in Nevada, primarily Las Vegas, spread out throughout all of Illinois, and then Indianapolis, Indiana. But our branch network spans throughout the entire United States. Through our shared branching, we have about 5,500 branches available. So no matter where you go in the United States, you could walk in and have your credit union one account serviced.
So by an ATM or actually by a person?
By a person.
Really?
You just walk in and say, yeah, you just walk in and say, hey, here's my credit union account. Can you help me? And they would say, absolutely.
So that would be like another bank place.
Absolutely. In banking terms, it would be like banking at Chase and being able to walk into Bank of America and say, hey, can you help me? They would obviously say no, but in the credit union space, we would be able to do that.
Okay, well, that's cool. So where do you see these mortgage? Are you concerned with the rates being this low? Again, the reason why I'm asking is my brother does some research as well in the markets, and he sent me this thing the other day. If it's not enough to worry about in the market, it had to do with how the amount of cash out refis are almost the same level they were in like 2006, 2007, where they weren't just refis for a lower rate. Just for the listeners, what I'm getting at here is if you own a mortgage of $100,000 and you're paying 5%, clearly the smart person is going to go over to Todd's place or someplace and say, what's the rate? And Todd's going to say, well, the new rates are 4. Well, you're going to refinance, correct? But you could either refinance for $100,000 and just get a lower number, or you can say, well, how much is my house worth? It looks like I can refinance for $150,000, and by the way, I foolishly got $50,000 on my credit cards, and I'll pay those off. So those are a cash out refi, correct? And that number was getting, you know, astronomically high in 2006, 7, and 8, and kind of look what happened. And I guess for a long time, Todd, you probably know these numbers by heart, I'm just reading them secondhand, is that kind of stopped, where people were just doing refis to refi. I won't say stop, but it cut down a little bit. And now these guys are saying it's marching way back up again. Are you seeing the same thing or no?
It is. You know, to answer, to go through the questions, yes, we're concerned about the rates. I mean, you hear the rates dropping from a prime rate standpoint, but what the general public usually isn't unaware of, the mortgage rates are based off 10-year treasury. And so the 10-year treasury has not been going up or down significantly. So each time the Fed makes a rate announcement, they see the rates go down in the prime, which is going to affect your home equity because that's a variable rate. It's going to affect your credit card because that's a variable rate. But the mortgage loans, you'll notice they're not dropping because they're at an all-time low. And quite frankly, we at Credit Union One, and I'll probably speak for the industry, we're at the bottom point of we can't afford to drop them any lower, or you're at the point where you're losing money. And you've got that money locked in for a significant amount of time. The other thing it affects is people typically, even though it's a 30-year loan, they usually only keep that loan for about 8 years. Either they sell the home, you know, they refinance, they, you know, various reasons. But what happens is when you refinance and you realize you're at the lowest rate possible, then it gets extended out to maybe 10 years before they pay it off. Well, that creates significant interest rate risk, as I'm sure you're aware, that now we've got that money locked in at 3%, and the rates start to tick up to 3.5%, 4%, 4.5%. Instead of being able to lend it out at the market rate of 4.5%, we've got the loans locked in for 3%. That's a huge reason why we, as do the banks, send the loans to Fannie and Freddie so that we're not subject to that interest rate risk. And it allows us to be able to adjust to the market and have funds available to lend. And so that's primarily the strategy behind utilizing Fannie or Freddie.
So if you...
scenarios, and then you tend to make your money off of the servicing income by having that available.
So if there was a, and there might be, if there was a hedging instrument, it would be an option or a future on the 10-year treasury, and you guys would normally go out 8 to 10 years, if you could.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a little bit long for us. Typically, you know, we would build a ladder, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year, so that we can move along as it rises. So for that reason, to answer your other question, they are truly refinancing. It's just like before the last great recession is, you know, people are going to say, hey, the rates are not going to drop much lower. I've got to get while the getting's good. I think the rates, what we have determined is the rates are going to stay at this all-time low. I would anticipate at least halfway through the year. You know, the Fed's talked about cutting rates in December. I'm not so sure that they will anymore. I think there's like a 50% chance, the economists are saying, that they'll cut it again maybe in March. I don't believe if they cut it, it's going to drop the mortgage rates. I think the mortgage rates you're going to see are actually going to tick up, because the goal is to get rid of the inverted curve and, you know, the inverted yield curve and have the 10-year treasury rise. And as that rises, the mortgage rates will actually go up. So the goal of the Fed lowering the rates is actually the short-term rates, when in hopes that the 10-year will rise. And if that happens, the mortgage rates go up.
What if any, and I'm not trying to lead the witness here, so don't let me lead you. What if any concern do you have on, I think you just said you had some concern with the, let me put it this way, everybody will tell you, if you ask them, you probably would not, because you, that when rates are low, it's the best time to buy a house. Or I think if you actually thought about it, when rates are low, it's the worst time to buy a house, because you're paying too much for the house, right? I mean, what is the concern at Credit Union One and other places that if, you know, Joe Jamoke walks in today, buys a home, you know, an average home, 185 grand, 200 grand, has the money, puts it down, and what do you think his price risk is if 4 years from now the rates are now 5.5? I'm going to say more historically normal. That house has got to be down, unless the economy picks up dramatically. Are you guys concerned about that at all? I mean, you probably are. I don't know what you can do about it, but how concerned are you?
I don't know that we're concerned. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword. When the rates are lower, it definitely spurs the market. It creates pricing to go up. It's a hot market now. So you've got bidding that's going to take place, and the home values are going to drive up. Now, the other side of the, you know, the other cut from the sword is having the lower rate allows for you to have a lower payment on the amount that you're going to finance. So you have more affordability. The buyer has more buying power because they're getting it at a lower rate. And in some cases, you know, it could be a difference of $100, $200, $300 in their monthly payment. So right, they're willing to jump up to that higher level that the market has pushed up. That said, yeah, you're probably going to have a little bit of a dip in the housing value, because if the rates drop up to 4.5%, 5%, the market's going to drop. You're going to have less competition for that home. And just like anything else, the supply and demand, you're likely to see a bit of a dip in that value. I think if you're going to stay there, that's not really a concern. It's kind of like you talk about here. The price of the home only matters until you sell it. So,
right,
yeah, if you're willing to go do treat it like a stock market and say, hey, I've got my mortgage at this incredibly low rate of 3%, I can ride out the next dip and wait for it to go back up again and sell, because I don't need to move. I don't need to refinance. So it isn't something you can really control. Like you said,
it's, right,
it's something we can talk about and debate. But yes, there's two sides of it. The market's going to jump. The market's going to drive the pricing up, but it's also going to get more consumers into the market and help their affordability with the lower rate.
I would agree. But one of the issues that, I don't know, we saw, maybe because of a lot of our listeners got caught in there. One of the issues after the 2008-09 fiasco was a lot of people were lost their job, and they were in a home that was seriously underwater, and they might have been able to get a job in, like, Tulsa, couldn't go anywhere. Because, you know, the home, like you say, if you can live there the 30 years and get the lower rate, you don't care. But if somehow or another you're forced to sell, that's a problem, or can be.
Yeah, I think that what happened, you know, and you can, you know, watch the movie The Big Short if you want the long version, but there was a lot of speculative mortgage. There was a lot of speculative home buying where people, they didn't even live in the home. They were
all
just
right,
buying homes as if they were the stock market and saying, hey, I'm going to buy the house, not live in it, wait till it goes up and sell it. And eventually, you know, the consumers were not living in those homes. You had the liar loans going on where they weren't validating the income. I think that's something that you've seen that's a little bit different in this market. You know, the banks and the credit unions learned that, you know, the chickens come home to roost. You can't continue to do that and drive prices up without having them be real purchases and driving real market demand,
which is
speculative. So I think that's a little bit different than what we saw in the 2008, 2009 version of the economy boom with the home mortgages. So I think we're set up a little bit better this time around.
I would say you are.
Than
hey,
last time.
Can I talk you into staying for the break a little bit or no?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure, no problem.
S&P futures all went up 3.25 now. They were up 5. NASDAQ futures up 15. We'll give the full rundown when we come back. I'm Tom Howe. He's Mr. Todd Gunderson. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. good stuff here. I'm learning a lot. I love it when I have people and I learn stuff.
Absolutely.
It helps me out in the morning. A good reason to get out of bed. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We'll be back with Mr. Todd Gunderson in a second. S&P futures up 550, NASDAQ futures up 2025. First time in a while that we're actually up here. Dow up 42. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 29.2%. It's down a little bit from what we were a minute ago. FTSE, however, off on a roller, up 96, 1.3%. CAC ran up 19.3%, so the FTSE is the outlier there. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 74.3%, Shanghai down 18.6%, the Hang Seng bouncing back a little bit from the big loss yesterday, up 128, it's 0.5%. We've got 10-year yields, 1.76, that's minus 0.01. The Bund, minus 0.35. The Japan is down, is only minus 0.08. It got, I think, the minus 0.06. I think these guys by the end of the year might break positive, but we will see. I don't want to jinx them. Gold up 740, 1471. Silver up 6 cents, so reasonably over $17. Now 1713, it dipped down for a day. Copper still 263, absolutely stuck in the mud. We've got oil down 26 cents, but still over 58, 58.32. The XLE, which I have some people in, which has not been the best performing index, had a nice move yesterday. We'll see if it continues today. I doubt it with oil stopping here, but again, over 58 was 52, 53 a while ago, so really oil is up probably 10% in the last 3-4 months, so it's been a pretty significant move. Natural gas up 2 cents, 258, but still under 260. RBOB 169, so that's creeping up. We take a little bit more to fill the Suburban up this weekend. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That earlier crash on the Kennedy is all clear, but the Kennedy is pretty jammed up in both directions, as you can imagine, when there was a big crash on the outbound side earlier this morning. So not able to enjoy your typically quiet Friday morning traffic, as we're near an hour from O'Hare into downtown and on the outbound side as well. That earlier crash on the Eisenhower on the outbound side just before First Avenue is all clear, but still a heavy traffic on I-290, Old Post Office to Mannheim, up to 29 minutes throughout 390, 42 minutes, and growing there on the outbound Ike. Inbound side looking normal. Traffic okay on the Stevenson. Southside expressways are relatively quiet. Only other issues in the area, looks like we have an issue. A Western Boulevard between 40th Street and Pershing Road is blocked. Looks like due to a truck that is stuck in the mud, which that's the first that I've heard of that in the city. But
well, it must be off the road onto the boulevard.
I would say so. Also, there's a structure fire on 81st between Union Avenue and Wallace that has crews on the scene. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, we'll have some sunshine, but cold temperatures, a high of just 36 in the city. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 65 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 52. In sports, Blackhawks dropped their second straight, losing to Tampa Bay last night 4-2. Coyotes lost to the Maple Leafs 3-1. Bulls were off last night. They'll welcome former Bull Jimmy Butler into town tonight as the Miami Heat make a visit to the United Center. That's a 7 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. Suns lost to the Pelicans 124-121. Thursday night football last night, it was the Texans over the Indianapolis Colts 20-17. College hoops, Notre Dame rallied back to beat Toledo in overtime 64-62. And the White Sox made a splash in free agency, signing all-star catcher Yosemite Grandal to a 4-year, $73 million deal. Chief.
The A-Tide, reason why it may seem to you probably like, why is this guy so concerned about interest rates going up fast? Well, I'll give you a Cliff Notes version. We, back in the, quote, condo craze, when interest rates were flying up in the late 70s, a friend of girlfriend at the time, and still friend, we were sort of in the condo remodeling business, you know, sort of half-assed, but not bad. And we did a few places and made a few bucks. And then she was a treasurer of Pullman Standard, so she had a good relationship with the people at Continental Bank. So we get this place on the north side, and instead of getting a mortgage, we get a bridge loan. Right, because we didn't want to pay no stinking charges, right? I think we started out at 8.5, and in 6 months we were paying 14. That's how quick the stuff went up. I forget what horrible year it was, 78, 79, somewhere in there, when the rates went up to like the, literally topped out at what, 15 or something? And I've never forgotten. Once that happens to you once, like, you sort of never forget it. I mean, I was stunned. I mean, every month we were going up like 1.5%. It was, I mean, everybody's worried now about the Fed with a quarter point cut, but they didn't have no stinking quarter point cuts or raises in those days. They were a whole full point every month, it seemed. It was a different
world. It wasn't so long ago that I remember getting a mortgage at 7% in the 90s and thinking that we were getting a great deal. And when it dropped down to 5, I thought we were stealing money. And now, you were to present a 5% rate to someone, they would feel, you know, like they're that you're crazy.
Yeah.
So it's funny how much the market changes over time.
Remember the I don't know if you're old enough, but you remember the first the first real condo craze, where all, I mean, people just invented them, and they were going like, I think you could have bought a studio in the Hancock Building for like $19,000, and everybody was, man, why would anybody want to buy an apartment, right? Well, obviously,
right,
it was
right.
A home to buy. But we went to, the same lady and I went to this place on, it was on Belden, right across from the Belden Deli, so obviously it was on Belden. And this building was going condo, and there's all these people that are looking around, looking at the apartments. All of a sudden, one of the ladies calls down, like, to the corn pit at the Board of Trade and says, okay, everybody can go. What do you mean we could go? Some three guys at the Board of Trade just bought these places. You guys are out. And every one of them, not one of them closed. They all sold it to somebody else for a big profit before they even closed on a place. That's how fast the stuff was.
Yeah.
The good old days, if you were in. Huh? Now it's not that much fun, is it? But I think it's fun when people get in places at a decent price and actually have a place to live and the prices hang in there. I mean, nobody's looking to make a fortune on their household. It's nice. But I think, I mean, you think we're somewhat stable here. Right? And I think you have a pretty good read of it, that we're probably okay, that even if rates go up a little bit, the housing might drop a hair, but not enough to hurt anybody. I mean, you guys are sort of in the everyman areas. What about, you don't do like Manhattan and so forth. Do you think it's just, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that we have some stability. Like I said, the 2008, that was a lot of speculative mortgage buying. You had people that they were not even living in the homes. They were, as you said, they're trying to sell them before, you know, and it was almost like they were trading stocks. I think those days are gone. You know, living here in Chicago, you're right, we might not be in Manhattan, but there's plenty of affluent people. I mean, that's why we actually, if you listen to our ad, we actually advertise the jumbo loan for mortgages over $500,000. As well as, because the average loan, we're, you know, our average loan is about $225,000 across the credit union. So we're helping, I would say, a lot of middle America and a lot of, you know, a lot of people within the Chicagoland area. But we're also tapped into the jumbo loan market and helping them. And what we're seeing is that there's a lot of equity in homes, you know, even at that level. They're not leveraged to the hilt like maybe they were in the past, where they were doing 100% financing, or, you know, 10 years ago, it used to be, hey, do an 80% first mortgage and a 20% second, so you're financing 100%, and then hoping that the value of the home goes up to get you into the LTV you should have been at to start with. So all those types of loan products are gone. So even when we're dealing with the higher-end things, and maybe you're doing a $1 million home, the home's coming in worth $1.8 million. So even if the market took a little bit of a hit and drops that home down a couple, $200,000, what we're finding is that the people are in pretty good shape from an equity standpoint and actual net worth, where before, it was inflated, and they were hoping that the market would continue to push them home values up, and eventually that stopped, and that's where the market started to take a turn for the worse.
Your clientele, I'm going to guess you don't have an issue here, but by the way, what is the, if you had to speculate, what's the difference? How much difference is there between your average loan and your median loan?
Average difference in what aspect?
Well, I'm saying if you average them all together, it might be 220, but if you were to take, you know, 50% over them and above them, I'm guessing it's below 220, because you're going to average the 500,000 in with the 100,000.
Yeah, we're unique in the fact that, you know, it's not unusual that you're going to have a $750,000 or $1 million loan application here in Chicagoland area, especially in some of these, you know, I guess you would say wealthier neighborhoods. But we also have a presence in southern Illinois. So when you're doing loans in Danville and Kankakee and down south, you know, obviously those home values are a lot less. So when you blend those into our portfolio, it does tend to bring the average down. So if you broke it down, you know, by our portion in southern Illinois, you're going to see, yes, those home values and mortgages are a lot smaller. And I would say they're closer to $150,000 or $125,000. And then they're much more above the $225,000 once you get into the city. And the same thing, since we're, you know, in Nevada, you see the same thing there. If you're in the Las Vegas area and some nicer areas like Henderson, you've got some really large loans. But in the outlying, yeah, they're much lower than the $200,000.
Without, I'm assuming the governor's not listening, so I think you can feel free. What, in some areas, are taxes becoming a big problem? I know my significant other, she sold a couple of homes out in, like, Park Forest. Jeez, the homes are under 60 grand, the taxes are 6 grand. I mean,
yeah, I don't think it's any secret. I think Illinois right now has the second highest housing tax market behind New Jersey in the country. So it plays a significant role, obviously, when you're doing when you're collecting those, you know, as part of your mortgage payment. A lot of people are, in some cases, you know, they're paying $1,000 a month just in their taxes. And these aren't expensive homes. I mean, you could have a home that's $450,000, $500,000, and depending on what suburb you live in, you're likely to have a $13,000, $14,000 tax bill. Well, that's an extra $1,000 to your payment that on top of the mortgage, that's going to reduce your buying power. So it's definitely a challenge. It's a challenge if you have rental properties as well. You know, you have people paying the rent, and as an owner, if you've got $1,000 going out to taxes, that's going to decrease that margin significantly.
I'm going to guess that I'm going to ask and guess that 20 years ago you had very few people whose tax bill was higher than their mortgage, and now I bet you've got 20% of your people are like that.
Yeah, especially as you have people that are, you know, towards the end of their mortgage, their tax bill is significantly higher. So it is a challenge. It's something that, you know, everybody talks about. I think that it would be great if we could find a way to do that. It's also, if you look at it, it's a reason why we're having an exodus out of Illinois into other states. You look at, you know, the people that are leaving the states, and Illinois is usually one of the top ones. And you have that tax component that's obviously playing a part. And I'm not advocating what side of the fence you should be on politically. I mean, these are it's just data. People are leaving, and real estate taxes are high.
That's when you go into your Joe Friday, just the facts. They're just the facts.
Right. That's correct.
One final question, Todd, because I could sit with you all day and talk, but I don't know how many of these loans you guys have, but some people that are listening to the show a lot have been shipping me some stuff from, like, North Shore, where some of these homes that were, you know, multi-million dollars are now, you know, foreclosing for way less than that. And there's just a demographic. I mean, I'll say that, you know, Mr. Weber on the board here is terrific dude, engaged to a lovely lady. They're both, like, 35-ish. I don't think you could give them one of those houses. I mean, is it the demographics change and these things, are they becoming behemoths? I mean, the people stuck on those mortgages got to be wondering what the hell.
You know, I think that's one of the things that's changed over time. It used to be what they call the McMansions. You know, we went through that time frame in the 90s and 2000s where people wanted that, you know, 3,500 to 5,000 square foot home, and that was the kind of the dream home. Where people nowadays, you know, they're looking at smaller homes because I think that the layouts of them, you can do a lot more functionality with a lot less square foot, and it makes it more affordable. So you're right. I don't think that those homes that are built in, I think they have a little bit less of a market appeal as opposed to, you know, the open concept now where you want to be able to have it all on one floor, and you don't need the square footage that you used to be able to do that. So I guess as the architects have evolved with how the homes are built and what they're able to present. Yeah, they're smaller homes, and I don't think people are attracted to them like they used to be. So they tend to probably stay on the market a little bit longer and maybe not get the price that they were looking for.
Well, they certainly are nowhere close to replacement price, I don't think.
No, especially if you bought them during the time when home values are going up, up, up.
No, I'm talking just time and material. I mean, you're going to pay $2 million for a place, and if you had to build it today, it would cost you $4 million.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Todd, give yourself a shameless plug or two here. We have a little bit of time. I mean, you're saying that if you're talking about a mortgage, you probably go online first, or you pick the closest branch, and there's somebody there to talk to you. Chop, chop, right?
Yeah, you can do whatever is most comfortable. You can call our 1-800 number. You can go online and apply through that process, or you can stop into the branch. I mean, we've got rates where, you know, on the radio, we're advertising 2.99 for our jumbo loan.
Okay.
And I think you're going to find that you'd be hard pressed to do, you know, a loan depending on the LTV and the credit, that you should be in the threes, and now is the time to do it, you know. I think that the rates are going to stay this way for another, you know, 6-9 months, and then I don't think it's going to change before the election. I don't think politically anybody can afford to have the rates skyrocket up, or in that matter. And then after that, I think it's a crapshoot to see what's going to happen. Well, I don't think the rates are going to do anything but go up after the election.
I would. Well, you could have back in August of '82, Todd. We had the markets were about 800 on the Dow, you know, and the interest rates were 15 or something. And all of a sudden, one day, somebody came out who was a noted sage and said these interest rates could go the other way. Well, they've been going down since then, and the market's been going up since then. And you wonder, one of these days, somebody might come out and say, you know, the fact that we don't have any inflation, yeah, we do, and they could go the other way. I mean, I don't imagine that you would, in my business, if you were managing money for people, that you would ever put your mother's money in a 10-year note at 1.7. I mean, you'd say, why would I ever do that? And certainly around the rest of the world, you would never do it for negative, right?
So especially when you can go to Credit Union One and get 1.7 in a savings account.
That's exactly right.
So there's my shameless plug. Instead of doing a 10-year treasury, just put it in our checking account or savings account. We'll give you 1.7.
Todd, if it's a good product, it's not a shameless plug. You're helping people out. Right?
Well, appreciate that. That's true. You said, just the facts.
I mean, if somebody's paid 48 cents for a gallon of gas and you show them a spot where it's 35, it's not a plug. You're helping them out. Just say it. Hey, thanks, buddy. I'll have to have you back. I'd like to get, you know, if we can, we'll talk, but I'd like to have somebody come in like every week for even a couple of minutes and talk about where the mortgage rates are. Because, maybe every couple of weeks. How quickly are they moving these days? And not really, or?
You know, they've actually been trending up here recently, but they were down so low, the market is so hot. You know, the 10-year treasury is bumping up, so the rates are inching up, but they're still so attractive that it's not necessarily slowing down the market. It's something that we look at the pricing every day. I mean, it can change throughout the day, but they're staying pretty consistent and they're inching up slowly.
Last question, I promise. I stepped into your... The branch on Fullerton and Washtenaw, is that, there was probably 2-3 tellers, 4 or 5 other people there to help people that were waiting for other stuff like mortgages and everything. Is that it seemed like a nice size parking lot. Is that a typical branch, or is that a big one, a small one?
That's our, I think you were down in Logan Square. So no, that's our, I would say a medium sized branch for us. I mean, they do a great job. They're one of our busier branches. They do a lot of mortgage volume down there. You have a lot of people in that area that are coming in for mortgages. The manager down there, Gina Earle, does a great job with her team. So I would say it's a pretty typical branch, and hopefully had good service when you're down there.
But yeah,
they're one of our busier locations.
Are the ones at the universities a lot different, or obviously the younger people?
They are. We actually just remodeled. We're in the process of remodeling all three of them, and they've got a lot more. Probably the easiest way to describe it is that kind of maybe the Apple, you know, open air concept.
Okay.
With, you know, people walking around. It seems that's what people are looking for now, especially in the younger demographic. So we're remodeling all of those three locations to be more of a fit for, you know, what the expectations are for the consumer nowadays. So and they look pretty cool. Our one actually looks like a basketball court. If you walk in, it's
really
the floor. Yeah, it's just like we're the naming rights sponsor for Credit Union One Arena. So when you walk into the branch, it looks like Credit Union One Arena. It's got the 3-point line with the basketball floor and the crowd on the wall and people really seem to like it. It's kind of a cool little thing that the UIC students and faculty think
cool.
It represents their school.
Great, Todd. Thank you for spending your Friday morning educating us. Well,
no problem. My pleasure.
I think it's enjoyable. It strikes me. I deal with. And Maddie knows that I know people from all different walks of life, and it really frosts me that in some neighborhoods, maybe some of the minority neighborhoods, how bad people get screwed on these mortgages. And it just, you know, when I hear somebody, you know, doing $5,000 in clothing costs, you don't want to mention that they got screwed necessarily, because they're going to feel bad about it. But boy, it is interesting when firms, you know, move in and are legitimate in a place, how much people can actually save just on regular stuff. And
You know,
well, to that extent. Here's where I'll help you. I'll give you one more last bit of advice. Why don't you go ahead and make sure your significant other has a bunch of credit union one cards to hand out, so that way she can make sure all of her clients are getting the best rate.
You know what? I will certainly mention that to her, and thank you. And I mean, again, I've enjoyed our two talks. Hopefully, it won't be the last. We'll do another one. But this one, the mortgage thing today. I think people needed to know the history of it and where it's at. And we're going to cut this up and put it on our website if anybody wants to listen later. And you have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Man, it was cool.
Very cool.
You learn something? When are you going to buy your new house? You know.
Sorry, I had to say goodbye to Todd, and you went right to me.
I said, "Well, that's all right. You know, but you're ambidextrous." So say, you know. So when are you going to go pick up one of these things on the North Shore? You and Jill that are going for half replacement cost.
I don't want to live in the suburbs, so not anytime soon.
No, I those things are way too big. I mean, I don't know. The remember the wacky guy. He started the options or fast money on the. What was his name?
Not sure.
He ended up going to MSNBC, and he had a big blow up on the air about how
Dylan Radigan.
Yeah. Well, Dylan, he was a New Yorker guy, right? Well, he came out. First of all, he kind of stole that show from Jan and the rest of us because we used to do a Traders on the Floor on TV here. We used to go over to the Weigel Studio and everything and do that. It was Jan and me. We had a couple total nut jobs from the CME. These guys were crazy, but it was a fun show. And we would, so Dylan saw this thing and he goes, wow, we could do this on national TV. And that's when he got the fast money idea. And, so Dylan comes out there. So Pete, John's brother Pete was going to move out there. And he goes, and Pete wouldn't have minded living in New York, but his wife didn't want any part of New York. So they get a place up in, Connecticut, right? And Pete takes the train in. It's, I guess, fairly convenient. I mean, I don't know how long the train is. But Pete's wife says, well, Dylan, you'll just have to come up to Connecticut and have, like, dinner on Sunday or something. And Dylan goes, let me help you. It's your business. Live wherever you want. But if you move to Connecticut, you're out of my range. I will never come there, ever. Sort of like you and Jill, Chief, you come up to Lake Forest for dinner. No, I'm not coming to Lake Forest for dinner, ever.
I mean, there's truth to that. Even going to, like, the south side, if you live on the north side or vice versa, very rarely is someone going to make that trip. Well, you do all the time.
Well,
but
yeah,
most people will not.
But it's, I also, but you know what? I'll tell you what, since, as you know, I used to like to cook every Sunday and have, you know, my family over, and most of them still on the south side, my brother Dan and everybody. I really have mixed emotions about our idiots taking 10 years to do this redo this burn interchange. As much as my food is pretty good and I want to see everybody, I don't know that it's worth an hour each way from the south side to fight way through the burn interchange and maybe you have a glass of wine, you're fighting your way home. I mean, it's only 10 miles? It's not worth that.
Right.
I mean, it's just, if it was such a bad bottleneck, which it is, and you're going to fix it, the idea that it's going to take 10 years to fix it is like...
It's almost not worth it.
Yeah. Well, I know. I dropped back into my railroad spurs, but this Englewood flyover, I'm going to say when that thing was conceived, so many trains were going through there, and now virtually all of them go through Joliet, and now you don't need it after doing it. Just saying. If you're going to wait this long, you could have just said forget it. Yeah. Anyway, SP Futures up 675. Interesting. Here's one, Manny. I'm kicking myself on. I didn't do this. Foot Locker. The stock is 42. With all these retail stocks went all over the place after earnings. The straddle in the thing was 550. So the straddle is like a 12% move. That's unheard of. And it's up 50 cents. And I was trying to do this 42 spread at a dime. And, of course, I wouldn't pay 15 cents. Why would I do that? I bet it opens at 40 cents. I'm not happy because I didn't get any. I could have paid up a nickel. I just assumed with every retail stock going all over the place, this thing was going to open up. But
those stores suck too. Why? What are they doing?
I don't know. They doing anything online? I have no idea. I never bought anything in those places. And
I mean, they're overpriced. The service is okay, but they're just they're usually in shopping malls.
I guess they're in malls, and malls are dying.
Yeah, it's seems strange to me that they would be doing well.
Well, I mean, the Well, they're up 40 cents. I mean, they're trading 42. I don't know the history of these things that much, but these retails either had a huge big move. This is the first one that hasn't gone anywhere. And of course, I guess I could have paid a nickel more. What's a nickel when you're going to make a buck on it, right?
That's right.
God. S&P futures up 650. NASDAQ futures up 22 bucks. Again, individual stocks, the only ones really moving. Apple's up a buck 13, blowing up 156. We'll be back on Monday. Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.